And now Jill Bevilacqua is back with her weekly radio drama, The Vatican Centuries, looking at the people and places who made up the history of the Vatican. Episode 17 is entitled Empire and Papacy, The Conflict.
The mid-11th century marked the beginning of the most expansive period in the history of the papacy.
The short pontificate of Leo IX, from 1049 to 1054, saw the political alliance with the Normans, the worsening of relations with the Greeks, the reform of papal administrative machinery, the beginning of a consistent plan of government through legates, councils, and a greatly increased correspondence.
But the most significant fact of the period was the head-on collision between papacy and empire.
The causes of the conflict were political rather than religious, for when the reforming movement became involved in political events, a clash was inevitable.
As the centuries passed, the basilicas of Rome began to show signs of wear and tear, so that rather than adding to their decoration and splendor, the popes found themselves obliged to undertake repair and restoration work.
But apart from ordinary maintenance, the popes had to contend with the damage done to the city by wars, fires, and continuous outbreaks of violence between warring factions. The worst damage of all was caused by the attacks on Rome by Henry IV and the liberator of Pope Gregory VII, Robert Guiscard the Norman, who twice set fire to the city.
Henry made a concerted attack on St. Paul's, which almost certainly caused the collapse of the ancient porch which led to the door of the basilica. The Leonine city was destroyed by fire, and consequently St. Peter's also suffered. When the Borgo was attacked, the whole portico of St. Peter's was reduced to rubble. The Normans' fire spared only Castel Sant'Angelo, due to its solid structure, while the Lateran area, right up to the Colosseum, was burnt down.
From that day, the Lateran Gate was known as the Burnt Gate. When Urban II was elected in 1088, he was obliged to take up residence on the Tiber Island, as the Lateran was in the hands of an anti-pope. It was not until Easter Sunday of 1094 that he finally sat on the Lateran throne, which he'd bought with the money of a foreign abbot who had taken pity on the impoverished pontiff.
The personality who dominates this period is, without doubt, Pope Gregory VII, the man who's been called the Caesar of Papal Rome. He stands at the frontier between two historical epochs, a colossus of the Church.
The personality of Gregory VII showed itself immediately in his declared conviction that the primacy was the gift of Christ himself, and papal authority over kings and emperors came not from a human transference of imperial authority, but from God alone.
Gregory VII had none of those physical attributes people unconsciously expect to find in a leader. He was short in stature, unprepossessing to look at, with a weak voice and fragile frame, consumed by years of fasting. But his powerful personality and absolute dedication to the cause of the Church have made the name of Gregory VII one of the landmarks of papal and church history.
Elected by popular acclaim, Gregory kept the support of his people when he became pope. For 2 years later, they confirmed their choice by defending their favorite in a dramatic incident. And out of a humiliating experience, Gregory became stronger and more beloved than ever before.
Christmas Eve, 1075. It was raining. Gregory was celebrating Mass at the crib of St. Mary Major. Suddenly, shouts were heard and the clash of armor. Into the church rush Cencio, the bandit son of the former prefect of Rome and the Pope's declared enemy. Together with a band of soldiers, he pushed his way through the frightened congregation, entering the enclosed part of the altar near the crib where the Pope was. He seized Gregory by the hair, dragged him off the altar, and threw him to the ground. He pulled off the Pope's sacred vestments, and carrying him out of the church, set him on his horse and galloped off into the dark.
For a moment, the people were too dazed to react. Then they sounded the alarm. Soon, everywhere, the bells of the city were ringing. The military were forcing open all gates and scouring the streets with flaming torches. No sign of the Pope. The people held a council on the Capitol Hill. And then, at dawn, the news came through that Gregory was being held prisoner by Cenci in his fortified tower near the Tiber. The kidnapper had not succeeded in getting his victim out of the city.
The people swarmed in a mass to the tower, forced their way into the building, and demanded the Pope's release. Cenci had no choice but to give in. On promising the Pope that he would make a pilgrimage of repentance to the Holy Land, he and his gang were allowed to go free. Only the mercy of the Pope he had so ill-treated prevented Cenci from being lynched by the furious mob. But the people took their revenge. They burnt his house to the ground. They set Gregory on their shoulders and carried him back in triumph to St. Mary Major's. The Pope took up where he'd left off and finished the Mass.
Gregory VII opened his programme of reform by issuing a decree forbidding the lay investiture of clerics. When the Emperor Henry IV refused to accept this, Gregory wrote to him privately, asking him to come to Rome to beg pardon. But Henry made the letter public, and in 1076 he called the Diet of Worms, asking for the Pope's deposition and denouncing him as a false monk.
Gregory replied by excommunicating Henry and releasing his subjects from obedience to the Emperor.
I withdraw the government of the whole kingdom of the Germans and of Italy from Henry the King, son of Henry the Emperor, and I absolve all Christians from the bond of the oath which they have made to him or shall make, and I forbid anyone to serve him as king. And since he has scorned to show Christian obedience and has not returned to the Lord whom he has deserted, holding intercourse with the excommunicate, committing many iniquities, despising my warnings, which, as thou art my witness, I have sent to him for his salvation, separating himself from thy church and trying to divide it. On thy behalf I bind him with the bond of anathema.
The bishops deserted Henry, promising him future support only if he asked the Pope's pardon. Gregory travelled north to preside over Henry's trial, but the Emperor saw he would have to submit and set off south to meet him. The Pope took refuge in the castle of Countess Matilda at Canossa, thinking Henry was going to do battle. But the Emperor appeared in penitential guise, standing barefoot in the snow for 3 days, waiting for absolution. The Pope pardoned him, but Henry soon broke the conditions, and battle was joined once again.
In April 1081, Henry was at the gates of Rome with his army, but he was driven off by malaria. He tried again 2 years later, and this time launched a massive attack on the city. Fighting went on in and around St. Peter's, and as Henry gained control of that side of the Tiber, Gregory withdrew to Castle Sant'Angelo. He sent an appeal for help to the Norman Robert Guiscard. Meanwhile, Henry had himself crowned in St. Peter's by the antipope Guibert, who had been consecrated by excommunicated bishops. Guiscard then arrived and drove Henry out, sacking the city right and left.
When Gregory saw the destruction and desolation, he was heartbroken and asked to follow Guiscard south. In Salerno he called a new council, confirming all his previous condemnations. But he was a disappointed man and died only a year later. His last quoted words were, "I loved divine justice, I hated iniquity, so I die in exile."
Thanks there to Jill Bevilacqua, who wrote and presented The Vatican Centuries. She'll be back at this same time next week with episode 18. Be sure to join us then.